From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Claire Strempel with a quick look at the local and statewide news. Alaskans are still waiting for the final outcome of races after the recent general election, but there's no doubt who Juneau voters picked as their winners. KTOO's Chloe Plesnak spoke to Juneau Empire reporter Mark Sabatini about his recent article breaking down how capital city voters differed from the rest of the state.
Hello, Mark. Welcome. Thank you for joining me today.
Good to be here.
So we won't know final statewide election results until the 29th, but in Juneau, do we have a pretty good idea which statewide candidates came out on top among local voters?
We do. It's fairly clear at this point that Mary Petolwa was a dominant choice among Juneau voters. She's got 48% statewide, which means she's going to need to probably rely on ranked choice voting. But here in Juneau, she's got 75% of first choice votes among District 4 or downtown and Douglas voters, and 62% of those voting in District 3, which would be the Valley and some of the outlying communities like Skagway, Haines, Kulawak, and so on.
So Walker did better than Dunleavy here, but he also did far better relative to Guerra than he did elsewhere. What do you make of that?
Well, again, it shows that Juneau as a whole tends to vote more liberally than the state as a whole, because Dunleavy is the one candidate statewide who's got an outright majority of first choice votes as of now. He's got 51%. His two main opponents, Bill Walker and Les Guerra, combined are at 44%. So that's the statewide numbers. But you look in Juneau, and in the Valley, which is the most conservative area in District 3, he trails Walker there, basically 38% for Walker to 35% for Dunleavy. Guerra's about 11 points behind that at 24%. But then you look downtown and in Douglas in District 4, the governor's actually in third place, and he trails by a lot. Walker has 46% of District 4 voters. He's trailed by Guerra at 28% and Dunleavy at 25%. So he was certainly not popular where the governor's mansion is actually located.
There was some redistricting this election cycle. Did we see that influence vote counts?
Well, the redistricting process that both redefined the numbers for Juneau's two districts also added some communities to the new District 3, which was largely the Mendenhall Valley area. They now also have Skagway, Haines, Kulawak, some of the outlying northern panhandle communities. And what we saw was, while that district is still more conservative than the district that encompasses downtown Douglas and the Lemon Creek area, those outlying communities generally did vote considerably more liberally than the Mendenhall Valley areas did. I believe it was out in Kulawak you had Murkowski get 80% of the vote in that precinct, whereas she and Kelly Shabaka essentially tied 43-43 statewide. And in the Mendenhall Valley district, Murkowski is still ahead, but it's more of a 55-30 split rather than the 80% she got in some of the most favorable northern panhandle communities. The other thing that was interesting is and you see this both in the outlying communities and in Juneau, it isn't always consistent. Up in Haines, there's two precincts, and they're fairly split, actually, one considerably more liberal than the other. So generally, adding those communities to District 4 made the numbers more liberal than in the past, but it's not consistent across the board.
Alaskans seem to agree en masse against a constitutional convention, with about 70% of statewide voters voting against holding one. How did Juneau residents vote on this issue?
Well, Juneau residents both in District 3 and District 4 were decidedly more against a convention than people statewide. As you noted, the statewide numbers were about 70-30. In the District 3 or Mendenhall Valley and Northern Panhandle communities, it got rejected by a 75-25 margin. District 4 for downtown Douglas and Lemon Creek, it was a landslide rejection. It was numbers were like 86% against and 14% in favor.
What about local elections? Two seats ran unopposed. Senator Jesse Keel and District 4 Representative Andy Story both gained another term in office, but incumbent Representative Sarah Hannon from District 3 ran against undeclared opponent Daryl Harmon. Was that a close race?
That was definitely not a close race. Sarah got about 80% of the vote. Daryl got about 20, and he admits he really wasn't much of an active campaigner. He made very little efforts during the initial stage of the campaign. Towards the end, he put out some flyers and had a website, but he admitted he was simply on there to give people something to check off on the ballot if they didn't want to vote for the incumbent.
Well, thank you for taking the time, Mark.
Okay, thank you for having me.
A salmon hatchery operator in Prince William Sound has agreed to pay a $1 million fine for hazardous waste violations. Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation pled guilty to illegally burning fuel and waste at its hatcheries, which led to a worker being seriously injured. Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports.
Alaska has 25 private nonprofit salmon hatcheries in the state, most of which are in southeast Alaska. Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation operates five of them in remote locations, three of which are state-owned. The hatcheries collect salmon eggs from indigenous DNA lines, fertilize and incubate them indoors, rear them outdoors in pens until they're big enough to be released into nearby waterways. What led the U.S. government charging the regional hatchery operator and the $1 million fine was years of illegally disposing of hazardous waste. The 18-page plea agreement filed November 9th focuses mainly on the Cannery Creek Hatchery, located in a remote inlet approximately 40 miles east of Whittier. Cannery Creek Hatchery violated federal environmental laws on several occasions spanning nearly a decade, according to the plea agreement. In 2013, there was a 400-gallon diesel spill, which resulted in the state suing the corporation and a few hatchery employees. That resulted in a $55,000 fine from state environmental monitors. The operator was also required to hire a consulting firm to create an environmental compliance plan for all five of its hatcheries. The consulting firm noted that the Cannery Creek Hatchery had no formal waste management plan. It was storing new and used oil products in various locations without appropriate containment, and it was burning solid waste in an open pit. 5 years later, in 2018, one of the hatchery's workers was seriously injured while tending to a burning drum with leftover jet fuel in it. He was medevaced out for care. Later, when the Federal Environmental Protection Agency investigated the site, the agency found that the hatchery was still burning drums of fuel. Other hatcheries were mentioned in the plea agreement, which states, the disposal of drums containing used oil was a long-standing issue at the hatcheries. The Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation eventually hired a contractor to remove several tons of hazardous waste from its hatcheries, according to the plea agreement. In addition to the $1 million fine, the corporation has agreed to 5 years of probation, during which time they'll follow an environmental compliance plan. Jeffrey Robinson, an attorney who is representing the hatcheries, said he could not comment on the case until it concludes. A spokesperson for the U.S. Attorney's Office said the sentencing is expected in about 3 months, but declined further comment. The salmon produced in the Prince William Sound hatcheries make up about 45% of the harvest value in the region, or about $50 million a year. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Anchorage School District administrators are no longer recommending eliminating language immersion programs as part of a plan to balance its budget. The school board announced the decision to a crowded boardroom Tuesday night. More than 100 people had signed up to speak at the school board meeting, many in opposition to cutting language programs. School board president Margot Bellamy encouraged them to contact state legislators about the need for education funding.
Every letter that you sent to us, every word that you were planning or are planning to say tonight, send it to our legislators.
The school board is still considering a range of recommended cuts, including closing six schools as it faces a $68 million budget deficit next year. Just before 11 a.m. on Wednesday, the lights went out across Juneau. The city's electricity provider, AEL&P, restored power within half an hour. Quote, "Well, folks, this one is on us," the company tweeted. AEL&P went on to explain that workers accidentally tripped the main transmission line from the Snettisham hydropower facility while performing routine maintenance.